Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and on this edition of the show, the Gilbert Family Foundation has announced a new $6.4 million investment in Venture 313. Linda Nosby, Director of Economic Mobility, will have the details. It was a beautiful weekend for the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix. We'll listen in on a conversation between JR Sunday's Mark Hollis and Eric Larson about the economic impact of race weekend. Werner's Ginger Ale is celebrating its 160th anniversary. Keith Wunderlich, founder of the Werner's Club and organizer of the June 14th event, will tell us all about the celebration. And Puwabic Pottery is hosting a fun event this weekend. Julie Smith, Puwabic Marketing Coordinator, will stop by to talk about it. A great show about what's happening in and around the D right after these messages. Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. We kick off today's show with Linda Nosby. She is the Director of Economic Mobility for the Gilbert Family Foundation. Linda, welcome into Opportunity Detroit.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Linda, we're going to talk today a little bit about the Gilbert Family Foundation's new $6.4 million investment in Venture 313. Tell us all about that.
Well, again, thanks again for having me. The Gilbert Family Foundation, we expanded our investment into Venture 313 by supporting Detroit Tech entrepreneurs. This has been a very important investment for us because, again, Detroit is now the second growing hub as it relates to technology and tech founders. And so it was important for us to be at the forefront to support these founders.
Linda, what is Venture 313?
I'm glad you asked. I think that's a question everyone always asks,
exactly, right?
Exactly, right. So Venture 313 is made up of three amazing partners in the ecosystem who support tech founders. And the goal of Venture 313 is to support founders from early stage with MVP, helping them with lines of credit through DDF. The MVP in early stage work starts with TechTown, who also serves as the program manager. And then as they matriculate through the program and get ready for bigger investments, that is where Invest Detroit Venture comes in that space. So a founder can start out with the idea, creating their app, working on getting customers and things of that nature, working with DDF as relates to getting technical assistance, a line of credit, attending our lunch and learn sessions on topics that really affect founders in this space through actually trying to raise pre-seed.
And you're also working with TechTown, Invest Detroit, and DDF, which is the Detroit Development Fund, correct?
That is correct. That is correct. And those three entities make up Venture 313.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the Detroit-based tech entrepreneurs that have actually benefited from this incredible amount of money.
I want to say almost 127 founders who have gone through from inception. Some of them, again, are working with TechTown on the early stage, where they're still trying to develop. Some are working with DDF as relates to lines of credit and technical assistance. And then some are working with IDV. So with TechTown, we have, oh my gosh, there's so many to name. Mecca Media, who is actually currently with IDV. We obviously have Cernova, who has gone through TechTown and now is on the IDV side. We have Breadless that was funded through DDF. So we have a lot of founders in the ecosystem that makes up 127 currently that we have supported over the last couple of years.
And you know, Linda, I have a feeling that a lot of these tech companies wouldn't be able to get started here in the city of Detroit without this investment.
You're absolutely correct. I think when we made the bet, we knew that this was a good investment. Again, technology is ever evolving, and to provide that kind of support for the founders was really, really important to us. And so, yes, to your point, had we not made this type of investment, it doesn't necessarily mean that they wouldn't have the support, but to have some have this bet made on knowing that tech and tech founders in Detroit is going to be the new hub. This investment has really been important to a lot of these founders to be able to get started and be able to actually go out and actually raise funds for their companies as well.
We're talking to Linda Nosby. She is the Director of Economic Mobility for the Gilbert Family Foundation. And Linda, talk a little bit about your job. What do you do on a daily basis here in the city to make this big difference with regard to economic mobility in the city?
So with my role, I'm really focused on expanding access for opportunities for Detroit residents.
Sure.
So whether it's on the technology side or the founders, whether it's for small business, and also helping build long-term financial stability and wealth. And a big part of our role or my job really is about entrepreneurship, which is about setting and growing businesses, which is one of the most powerful pathways for economic mobility. Venture 313 is definitely a centerpiece of that work, which is connecting Detroit founders with capital, coaching, and also connections that they need to be successful. So while we focus on the economic mobility, we have four pillars, which is education, workforce development, small business, and then tech and venture founders. That is really, truly my role, which is expanding access of opportunity to Detroiters as a whole.
So in your role, what kind of advice do you give, let's say somebody who comes to you and they say, you know what, we think we've got some ability here, tech ability, and we want to start a business. What advice do they get from Linda Nosby?
The advice for me is I believe I am a connector.
Sure.
So first is listening. Obviously, what exactly is it that they're trying to solve for? And then who do we have in the ecosystem that we can actually connect them to? So while we don't invest in those companies directly, we invest in partners who work with those businesses to actually have the funds that they need. And so for me, the most important thing is first listening to them, what the needs are, and then which of the partners that we are currently working with that we can actually, you know, connect them to. And then also obviously follow up with them and the partner to make sure that the individual is getting the help that they need.
Two-part question. Do you see room for growth for tech entrepreneurs in the city of Detroit? And if so, Linda Nosby, where, like what kind of tech companies would do well right now in the city?
Oh, gosh. So I believe we currently in the city, we have five DNAs, right? We have mobility.
Sure.
We have R&D, which, you know, when you think about the healthcare space, obviously consumer is going to be a major big one. I think the one that tends to get overlooked sometimes is actually energy.
Oh.
I think it is definitely huge. We have amazing founders like Geo that is actually doing some great work in that space and working with some of the energy companies in this space. So I think our identity has been identified, and I'm sorry, finally, which is advanced manufacturing as well. So having those identities, to me, ensures that we will be, the tech founders will be supported in those spaces. And so I do feel like there's room for it, and there's room for us to actually become the number one tech hub in the country.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. So do you have a feeling that people around the country are looking at Detroit as a really place to come and do business, Linda?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I feel like the world is currently watching Detroit, and whether it's investments within Venture 313, whether you want to talk about the Apple Developers Academy, I think all eyes is on Detroit right now and how we are showing up. For example, we have Mecca Media, who was based out in New York, who moved to Detroit as a part of our investment when we gave 10% into the company. And so, yes, I think all eyes is on Detroit and how we're doing things. And the support within the ecosystem for the founders is really impressive.
And in large part due to the Gilbert Family Foundation, because this is an incredible amount of money, and I have a feeling that we're going to see even more of it down the road.
Absolutely. Dan and the Gilbert Family Foundation, we solely believe in Detroit. His passion has always been about Detroit. And so it's always been about getting Detroiters in the front line, providing them the resources, working collaboratively across partners as well as foundations to make sure that the residents of Detroit have all that they need in this space.
And you know, the other thing, Linda Nosby, is this Rocket Classic and the incredible charitable arm that is part of the Rocket Classic. And that's related to technology, too.
Yes, it is. In some parts, it is. And I think sometimes when you think about different spaces, I don't think people really factor in tech. Tech is really everywhere. Really look about it. And so, yes, no one really thinks about it. But, you know, there's tech in those spaces. You know, AI is ever evolving. And It's all about how we use it in those spaces.
How do you feel about AI?
You know, okay, if you ask me personally how I feel about AI, I feel great about it. I think that AI is, if used wisely, will help fill in some spaces of where we might not be able to do things at, you know, things that would normally take you 3-4 months, mm-hmm. be able to utilize AI to actually get things done quicker. It's all about embracing it. AI is not going to replace individuals. It's definitely not going to replace the human touch to it, but it can actually, if you use appropriately, help you actually do things better, quicker, and faster. So that's how I feel about AI, is that AI is definitely here to stay, but it just has to be used wisely. And, you know, you'll be surprised at the things that you can actually get done.
Great advice. Linda Nosby, Director of Economic Mobility for the Gilbert Family Foundation, thank you for your time today. It was nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Anne, for having me. Have a great one.
You too. Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, it was a great weekend for racing in Detroit, and this event showcased the city at its best. The Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix in downtown Detroit is in the books, and it was a big success. JR Sunday's Mark Hollis talked to Eric Larson, the CEO of the Downtown Detroit Partnership, about the importance of the race for the city and the state of Michigan.
You and Bud Denker, Bud is the chairman of the Detroit Grand Prix and also has oversight on the entire IndyCar series, you're close friends. How does a conversation go when an event like that comes into town? To help elevate not only the event, but the city. And I think that's the important connectivity that you deliver on all the events that come in Detroit, is that these aren't separate things. You're there to be a partner. You're there to help elevate the event, but you're also there to help elevate Detroit in a positive way. And that combination, I've argued, was the precursor to Detroit having the opportunity to get these events, to show people that we work hand in hand together. And that relationship between you, Bud, you and others, but specifically for today, the relationship you have with Bud really helped catapult that result in a positive way of what fans are going to see downtown today.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and it has been, you know, not only a remarkable journey, but it's also been a great honor. I mean, this all started back when Roger Penske was our board chair back in 2006, came off of an unbelievable role with the Super Bowl and him chairing the Super Bowl committee, and then, you know, reviving racing in 2007. You know, again, as our board chair, you know, the Grand Prix is a subsidiary of the Downtown Detroit Partnership, and we couldn't be more proud. Fast forward, you know, with Bud, and not just our friendship that is very deep and really reaches well outside of just the Detroit Grand Prix, but, you know, really sort of all things that, you know, Bud is touching, and Roger and Michael Montre. We have leaned into this. I mean, for the past 20 years, we've committed over 80,000 labor hours to this race. You know, the ambassador team that, you know, keeps people clean and safe and just really making sure they feel welcome is in full force, not just at the race, but also throughout the downtown. And then, of course, you know, we spend a lot of time just thinking about how we can make it better, make sure that the small businesses are really being impacted in the way that they need to be. You know, the small business straightaway was an idea that came about to let small businesses that wouldn't normally have the exposure participate in this in the core of the downtown. And then, you know, obviously the 300,000 people that will be here over this 3-day weekend, you know, are seeing Detroit and spending, you know, time and quite frankly, you know, dollars that are important to our economy, but most importantly, to those that, you know, are here, you know, as you said, you know, all year round.
That's incredible collaboration, and the end result is nothing but positive for the state of Michigan, for City of Detroit, for Wayne County, in a positive way. I do want to ask this question. You and I are blessed to be around so many incredible people in the city of Detroit, and Roger Penske is right there. You know, he and Dan and so many others. When we went down to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and you hear stories about him going around and flushing every toilet, making sure everything is set, that type of leadership is admired, and I think it's something that not only you and I can learn from, but folks that are coming up in business today, that here's a guy who has everything, and yet his attention to detail, I'm assuming it's the same down in Detroit with you, is at an all-time high, and folks need to work that way, think that way, and lead that way, and he's one of the best examples of it.
Well, and I love the fact that not only you lift up, you know, Roger, and we have, you know, a saying, it's not our saying, it's his, you know, his philosophy, and that's Penske Perfect, and there's a level of attention to detail. You know, Dan Gilbert has the same thing, and you're right, we both have learned. I'll never forget when we did the grand premiere, which is a really important charity event every Friday before the Grand Prix race that, you know, generates some really, really important funding for five, you know, needy charities here in the city. And a couple years we did it right on that great lawn in Campus Martius, and I'll never forget the first year Roger walked up and immediately bent down to touch the grass and make sure it was cut just to the right length. So it's that level of detail. And, you know, by the way, it wasn't quite cut to the way he wanted it. So next year he asked me if I had, you know, dropped the blade a little lower. And so, but you're right. It's just, it's remarkable. I think about when, you know, he bought, you know, the Indianapolis Speedway, and the, not only the investment, but just the ability to really think through what ultimately is improving the fan experience and what is creating a lasting impression that is incredibly positive. And that same impact, you know, Mark, is the kind of thing that you and I are trying to do in Detroit. And it's not just downtown. It's really throughout the entire city, and we're seeing the benefits of that. Lot. We're standing on some pretty broad shoulders.
Having worked for Nick Saban and Tom Izzo and so many others, the grass may have been perfect, but by telling you it needs to be adjusted means keep your eye on everything, right?
It's like, that's right. That's
exactly always right. Be watching everything. So Eric Larson, yeah. CEO of the Downtown Detroit Partnership, one of the great, great collaborators, and just does incredible work down there on behalf of the city, the state, and frankly, much broader. I appreciate you so much.
I appreciate you too, Mark. Thank you so much. Yep.
That's Eric Larson and Mark Hollis. Coming up next, Verner's is celebrating a big birthday, and we'll tell you all about it. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. Verner's Ginger Ale will mark its 160th anniversary with a day-long celebration in Eastern Market on Sunday, June 4th. And to talk about this, we welcome Keith Wunderlich. He is the Verner's Club founder. He's also the organizer of the event, and he has written a book, and it's called Verner's Ginger Ale. Keith, welcome to Opportunity Detroit.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So let's start with the history of Verner's Ginger Ale. I can't believe it. 160 years, Keith?
It is absolutely amazing, really, when you think about it. It started back in a pharmacy, like many many pops were developed by pharmacists. And so James Verner came back from the Civil War and opened up a pharmacy at the corner of Woodward and Clifford, and started, like all pharmacies, you know, had a soda fountain, started messing around with, you know, various formulas. And he had worked before the Civil War as an employee of a different pharmacy, and had experimented there with soda fountain formulas as well. Went back to what he had developed before the Civil War, and found it was absolutely fantastic. And it was kind of undrinkable before the Civil War, and the 4 years of aging during the war had changed the drinkability of this ginger ale, so that it was now great. And that's how Verner's was born. Yeah. And it was, you know, ever since 1866, so back then you could only get it at James Verner's pharmacy, but then things grew and grew and grew until at one point in the 1940s, where Hart Plaza is now was a huge Werner's bottling plant that
really
took up an entire city block.
No kidding. I had no idea. Let's talk first about what exactly is in Werner's ginger ale. What is in this incredible drink?
Well, there's about 19 different ingredients, and they're all secret, and they've done a really good job of keeping them secret.
Yes.
In fact, the Werner's gnome, his job is to protect the secret formula of Werner's. And so I give a lot of kudos to the gnome for doing a great job. The Detroit Historical Museum has a formula book of James Werner's from the 1800s. And you look in that formula book and it says, here's how you make toothpaste and hand cream and hair dye and throat lozenges. And it does have the ginger ale formula, but it starts with extract. And they don't tell you how to make the, how they make the extract. So they left that out of the book. So even an early formula book won't tell you the secrets of everything that's in it. But of course, it's a ginger ale, so there is ginger in it. And that's why all our moms gave us Werner's when we felt sick as a kid, because that ginger did a great job of making you feel better.
Well, and that's a good point, Keith Wunderlich, because if you're from the Detroit area and you grew up around here, chances are at some point in your life, you were definitely given ginger ale if you felt sick to your stomach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And ginger does have those, they have that effect on your stomach to calm it. And the carbonation also helps. And so, yeah, and having a glass of pop just makes you feel better anyway.
Well, that's absolutely true. Why do you think Werner's Ginger Ale, Keith Wunderlich, has been around for 160 years?
Well, a great question, because there were other soda pops before Werner's that didn't make it. And then there's been, you know, others since that also have not. But Werner's, number one, it's a great product. But number two, what James Werner did as a pharmacist that I think others did not do, back then you had to go and have a soda jerk make a pop for you. They put a little bit of syrup in the bottom of a glass, and then they shot in the soda water, just a specific technique that they used to mix it all up real well. But you could only get it at the pharmacy, at that soda fountain. And what James Werner did was bottled that extract and then exported the extract. So it made him much more popular, much more transportable. I was able to cover a much bigger footprint with Werner's than most other people who were still just selling it at their own soda fountain.
Oh, that's interesting. And, you know, when we talk about Werner's Ginger Ale, we have to talk about Boston Coolers. How did Boston Coolers become connected to Werner's Ginger Ale, and how far back does that go?
That is another great question, because there's all sorts of interesting stories on the Internet about how Boston Cooler got its name. It has nothing to do with Boston, and nothing to do with Boston Boulevard, even. So it was a generic soda jerk term for any pop and vanilla ice cream.
Really?
And it developed over the years, started back in the 1800s and moved on. And the first time it was actually attached to Werner's was in the 1930s. But it had been attached to both root beer. You could get a Heyer's Boston Cooler and to other ginger ales as well. In 1967, Werner's was going to produce ice cream bar, you know, ice cream on a stick.
Sure.
And they wanted to call it Boston Cooler Ice Cream Bar. And so they went and trademarked what had been a generic name and then made it Werner's. So ever since 1967, that name has belonged to Werner's. And so most of us only can remember that there's always been Werner's. But before that, it was, you know, anybody used it and lots of people did. There's all sorts of advertisements for other companies having a Boston Cooler.
And a Boston Cooler basically is just Werner's ginger ale with vanilla ice cream, right, Keith?
Correct. And the difference between a Boston Cooler and a float is a float, you're not mixing up the ice cream with Werner's, and a Boston Cooler, you are.
Uh-huh.
And if you start with a float, usually all of us by the end of that float are stirring up the ice cream anyway, so we end up with the Boston cooler by the time we get to the bottom of our float.
Well, that's very true. Now, you mentioned the Werner's gnome and how the gnome protects the secret. What's the history behind the Werner's gnome?
The gnome first came into existence in late 1920s, right about 1928. Before that, there was a different mascot that was a delivery boy holding a case of Werner's. And that is a whole different story about when Werner's actually became portable and they could bottle it and they wanted you to take it home. And we had refrigeration at home and things that we hadn't had back in the 1800s. But the gnome began, and unfortunately, I don't have the exact history of why, but many other soda pops were having little characters to help them market their pop. And so you'd have the hillbilly with Mountain Dew, the Sprite Boy with Coke, you know, definitely different little characters that were associated with a soda pop. And so I'm sure somebody at one time said, well, maybe the delivery boy isn't exactly as cute as something else would be. The Werner's are of Irish descent, and so a leprechaun kind of guy made a lot of sense for the family. And so the gnome was developed back in the 20s and has been with the pop ever since, except for a short time in the 1990s when apparently it wasn't cool. But now he's back, and we're glad he is.
We're talking to Keith Wunderlich. He is the Werner's Club founder, and he is the organizer of an event coming up to celebrate Werner's Ginger Ale 160th anniversary. Keith, tell us about the event. It's June 14th. It's at Eastern Market, and it sounds like it's going to be a really fun thing to do.
It should be absolutely fantastic. We're shutting down Ryapel. So if people who are familiar with Eastern Market know where Marrow in the Market is, the restaurant, Eastern Market Brewing, Detroit City Distilling, Henry the Hatter, Strauss Brothers, so that street will be shut down. All of those businesses are participating with us. So Marrow is going to have Werner's Brunch with all things made with Werner's. Detroit City Distilling will be having some Werner's-inspired adult beverages. Eastern Market Brewing is making a Boston Cooler cream ale beer.
Oh, wow.
Which I cannot wait to try it. That's going to be absolutely fantastic. Henry the Hatter is going to be making hats. Kids can go there and make gnome hats at Henry the Hatter. So that is going to be so much fun. And then we also have a local ice cream maker, Milk and Froth, whose ice cream truck is going to be parked on the street, and they're going to be serving Werner's ice cream for the first time since the 1980s. That is not, Sanders had produced it back in the 80s, hasn't existed since. It's going to exist at this event. The Werner's gnome will be there. James Werner the Fifth is going to be there. Various businesses will be showing old Werner's TV commercials. We're going to have a DJ on the street. He's going to be playing Detroit music, but he's also going to have some vintage Werner's radio advertising, all sorts of fun things for kids to do. We've got temporary tattoos, games, a kids' coloring table, just lots and lots of different activities. Want everybody to come down. Most of it's free. You know, if you're going to be buying a T-shirt or the mural brunch or things like that, there's cost to some items, but no cost to get in and to have a lot of fun. Invite everybody down.
And you know, it's great, Keith, that you're celebrating 160 years of Werner's Ginger Ale as the country is celebrating 250 years because Werner's is a big part of our history.
It really is. I think one of the best things, one of my favorite things about events like this is that people are going to tell me their Werner's stories.
Right, right.
And I love hearing them. Like my parents dated at Werner's.
Oh,
when it was
gosh.
That big plant at the foot of Woodward, they would go, you know, probably every Friday night and, you know, have a cream ale or a Werner's or a Boston Cooler. And so many other people have Werner's stories like that. And I just love hearing that history. And it's just part of our culture in Detroit is Werner's Ginger Ale. And it's we need to celebrate it. It's just such a great part of our lives.
I love that you're going to have footage from the brand's 85th anniversary. You still have some of that, right?
Right. What wow. We're going to have 10 Verner's History stations throughout Ryotel, and people can scan a QR code, and it will take them to a YouTube video that takes them back in time to a certain anniversary. So we've got the 75th, 80th, 85th, 100th, 150th that we'll have videos on. And yes, lots and lots of historical information for those folks who, like me, are into the history of Verner's as well. We'll have that there for people to also explore.
Keith Wunderlich, Verner's Club founder and organizer of this fantastic event celebrating 160 years of Verner's Ginger Ale. Thank you for your time today. It was really nice to talk to you.
It was great talking to you, too, and hope to see a lot of people come down on Sunday, June 14th.
Absolutely. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. Coming up next, we are going to talk about Puyabic Pottery. For listening to Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas. There's a great event underway this weekend. It's called the Puyabic House and Garden Show. Julie Smith, Puyabic Marketing Coordinator, thank you for joining us on Opportunity Detroit today to talk about the event.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So this is a very cool celebration of the start of summer. Explain to us what's going on at the 36th Annual Puyabic House and Garden Show.
Yeah, so today we have artist demos, a little beer garden with live music and food trucks, just a lot of exciting things happening down at the pottery. This is actually our biggest fundraiser of the year. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we like to have a little bit of fun with our fundraising, so that's what's going on today.
And what does the fundraising, what is the money used for?
Yeah, so we were started in 1903 as a ceramic art studio by Mary Chase Perry Stratton and Horace Calkins. And then they have this absolutely wonderful long legacy of creating tile installations all over Detroit, as well as pottery pieces. So our historic nonprofit, it started as a nonprofit in the 70s, and so that money will go towards keeping our historic building and equipment as kind of up to date and as good as we can keep them. It also helps all of our artists keep doing exactly what they're doing, which is making tile the way that they did back in 1903.
Isn't this amazing? Puyabic pottery is 123 years old. That's really impressive.
It is. Oh, it's so exciting. To be part of this is actually a really great thing, and for Detroit as well. We've been around as an institution, and we are continuing to do exactly what we've been doing for a long time.
I love the mission statement. The nonprofit pottery continues its mission of enriching the human spirit through clay. How cool is that?
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
We really try to do that. We also have a robust education department. So we are teaching people all of these techniques of ceramics and going to Detroit public schools in their art programs as well. So we really try to be in Detroit and enrich people's spirits as much as possible.
How much does it cost to attend the event, and how can people get tickets?
Oh, it's actually a free event, so you can just come on down to the pottery. We have parking on site, and yeah, come on down, have some fun.
So Puyabic Pottery is a National Historic Landmark. Has it always been located on East Jefferson in Detroit?
So when it started, back at the beginning, it was actually in a little stable house in Brush Park. Yeah, and it outgrew that space pretty immediately. So by 1907, we moved into our current building, which is built as a pottery, and we've been there ever since.
And people should know that Puyabic Pottery can be found in many historic buildings throughout the city of Detroit. We just did an interview with Father Stephen Burr last week about Sacred Heart Major Seminary, and there's a ton of Puyabic Pottery in that building.
Yes, Yeah, we have amazing like historic installations. One of the easiest to see actually publicly is at the Guardian building. The outside facade is all Pahlavic tile, which is beautiful. But then the exciting part thing is we're still making tiles now. So things like Comerica Park have a lot of Pahlavic tiles. The Q Line stops have Pahlavic. And so we have these absolutely fantastic historical objects that have made it through time, through architecture, and we're still doing that now.
And can people order Pahlavic pottery for their homes now, too? How does that work, Julie?
Yes, yeah. So on our website, on pahlavic.org, you can kind of see a sampling of all that we do. We make vessels like vases and drinking vessels, like cups and mugs. We also make gift tiles. But we also have a fantastic design department. So if you're looking to have this absolutely beautiful Pahlavic tile in your home, we can actually still do that now. You can talk to one of our designers and do things. We do things like fireplaces, kitchen backsplashes. So we're still going.
Are there certain things, certain characteristics about Pahlavic that people can take a look at a tile or a vase or a bowl and say, oh yeah, that's Pahlavic pottery?
Yes. So there are a couple of things, especially if you're looking at a tile installation. Most of them will have nice thick grout lines, which is different for that time period. Even now, we're more used to thinner, more regular grout lines. The tiles themselves have fantastic glazes that are all formulated and made in our studio as well. And those glazes usually have a little more texture, a little more variation than standard tiles. So that's a good way to see it. We also, on our really all of our architectural tiles, they have more rounded edges. So you won't see pointy little perfect corners on our tiles. They're a little more organic.
No. I love that if people come to the event today, that they actually can learn more about the history through the studio tours of Pahlavic.
Yes. Yeah. You can go back into our fabrication space, see how everything is made. We'll also be having the artist demos out in the tent. So you can see people throwing vases on wheels, which is really exciting. We do tours all throughout the year of the pottery and also of installations all over Detroit. So we do on-site and off-site tours. We also have workshops where you can come in and learn how to glaze like one of our glaze technicians.
Oh, that's awesome. Julie, I know a lot of people that work at Pahlavic kind of have a heart for it. You know, they love the pottery. They love the history of the pottery connected to the city of Detroit. How did you get involved with Pahlavic?
Oh, that's a great question. So I was born and raised in Detroit. And when I nannied in high school, the kids that I was nannying actually came to Pahlavic for a workshop. And that was my first little taste. So the first time I walked into the pottery was my first time learning about it. In 2017, I was looking specifically for a job in Detroit in the arts. And Pahlavic fit all those bills, and it's been a fantastic place to work ever since.
I love that you have some history there, and you kind of have a heart for Pahlavic pottery. Julie Smith, Pahlavic Marketing Coordinator, thank you for your time today. It was really nice to talk to you.
Great. Thank you so much.
And I'm Ann Thomas. Thanks for listening to Opportunity Detroit. Enjoy the rest of your day.